As running mate to Dwight David Eisenhower, Richard Nixon, accused of pocketing campaign contributions, addresses the TV viewing audience with his infamous Checkers speech.
My fellow Americans, I come before you tonight as a candidate for the vice presidency and as a man whose honesty and integrity has been questioned. Now, the usual political thing to do when charges are made against you is to either ignore them or to deny them without giving details. I have a theory, too, that the best and only answer to a smear or to an honest misunderstanding of the facts is to tell the truth. And that's why I'm here tonight. I want to tell you my side of the case. I'm sure that you have read the charge and you've heard it, that I, Senator Nixon, took $18,000 from a group of my supporters. Not 1 cent of the $18,000 or any other money of that type ever went to me for my personal use. Do you think that when I or any other senator makes a political speech, has it printed, should charge the printing of that speech and the mailing of that speech to the taxpayers? Do you think, for example, when I or any other senator makes a trip to his home state to make a purely political speech, that the cost of that trip should be charged to the taxpayers? Well, I know what your answer is. It's the same answer that audiences give me whenever I discuss this particular problem. The answer is no. Well, then the question arises, you say, well, how do you pay for these and how can you do it legally? And there are several ways that it can be done, incidentally, and that it is done legally in the United States Senate and in the Congress. The first way is to be a rich man. I don't happen to be a rich man, so I couldn't use that way. Another way that is used is to put your wife on the payroll. Let me say, incidentally, that my opponent, my opposite number for the vice presidency on the Democratic ticket, does have his wife on the payroll and has had her on his payroll for the past 10 years. Now, just let me say this. That's his business, and I'm not critical of him for doing that. You will have to pass judgment on that particular point. But I have never done that, and I'm proud to say tonight that in the 6 years I've been in the House and the Senate of the United States, Pat Nixon has never been on the government payroll. Let me say, incidentally, that some of you may say, well, that's all right, Senator. That's your explanation. But have you got any proof? And I'd like to tell you this evening that just an hour ago, we received an independent audit of this entire fund. It's an audit made by the Price Waterhouse and Company firm and the legal opinion by Gibson, Dunn and Crutcher, lawyers in Los Angeles, the biggest law firm and, incidentally, one of the best ones in Los Angeles. I'm proud to be able to report to you tonight that this audit and this legal opinion is being forwarded to General Eisenhower. And I'd like to read to you the opinion that was prepared. It is our conclusion that Senator Nixon did not obtain any financial gain from the collection and disbursement of the fund by Dana Smith, that Senator Nixon did not violate any federal or state law by reason of the operation of the fund. Now that, my friends, is not Nixon speaking, but that's an independent audit which was requested because I want the American people to know all the facts, and I'm not afraid of having independent people go in and check the facts. And that is exactly what they did. One other thing I probably should tell you, because if I don't, they'll probably be saying this about me too. We did get something, a gift, after the election. A man down in Texas heard Pat in the radio mention the fact that our two youngsters would like to have a dog. And believe it or not, the day before we left on this campaign trip, we got a message from the Union Station in Baltimore saying they had a package for us. We went down to get it. You know what it was? It was a little Cocker Spaniel dog in a crate that he'd sent all the way from Texas. Black and white, spotted. And our little girl, Tricia, the six-year-old, named it Checkers. And you know, the kids, like all kids, love the dog. And I just want to say this right now, that regardless of what they say about it, we're going to keep him. And now, finally, I know that you wonder whether or not I am going to stay on the Republican ticket or resign. Let me say this. I don't believe that I ought to quit because I'm not a quitter. But the decision, my friends, is not mine. I would do nothing that would harm the possibilities of Dwight Eisenhower to become president of the United States. And for that reason, I am submitting to the Republican National Committee tonight through this television broadcast the decision which it is theirs to make. Let them decide whether my position on the ticket will help or hurt. And I'm going to ask you to help them decide. Wire and write the Republican National Committee whether you think I should stay on or whether I should get off. And whatever their decision is, I will abide by it. But just let me say this last word. Regardless of what happens, I'm going to continue this fight. I'm going to campaign up and down in America until we drive the crooks and the communists and those that defend them out of Washington.
Report from Senator Richard Nixon, nominee for the office of Vice President of the United States.
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Axis Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. Today's debate is, should universal health coverage be the U.S. federal government's responsibility? And now, back to the debate.
Let's bring Sally Pipes into the conversation. She is against the motion.
I just wanted to talk a little bit about Medicare. Remember when, in 1965, when Medicare and Medicaid came in, and the cost was about $3 billion, and it was projected to cost $12 billion in 1990. Well, in fact, it cost $107 billion. Last year, it cost $427 billion. It's estimated in 2017 to cost $884 billion. The Medicare trustees say the program will be broke in 2019. There is no cost control in Medicare. It's completely out of control. The recent Congressional Commission said that one in three Medicare patients is having a very hard time getting a doctor. And I have talked to many seniors who are having a hard time getting a doctor and a Medicare.
Art Kellerman, our ER man.
First of all, I heard some real interesting comments made from the other side of it. And I just want to say, y'all can't make stuff up because none of you are running for president. Second thing, Sally, you mentioned about Medicare. You know, we've had a recent experiment with private health plan efficiency. Private health plans have started administering Medicare. They're getting paid an average of 12% more per enrollee. That's nearly $1,000 more per person than traditional Medicare administers the same program. This is going to add $8.5 billion to the cost of Medicare this year in 2008. And since 2004, those plans will have sucked an extra $33 billion out of Medicare trust fund without improving the care of beneficiaries. So, again, Michael, I think you're right. We got a lot of people that have gotten their hands around the federal till and have made federal government a cash cow. I think federal government needs to be a watchdog.
I want to agree with
this is Michael Cannon.
I don't think that we do any better in terms of health outcomes here in the United States. But those things don't get you where you think they do. The fact that private insurance companies are ripping off the taxpayers through Medicare is problematic, but the alternative is to let the doctors in the hospitals do that, because they're the ones who've been doing that for the first 40 years.
I want to say one other thing.
And no, I'm not done yet. So, and the fact that we don't lead the, I don't think we lead the world in terms of health outcomes, but that just means that we're doing poorly. Other nations are doing poorly. No one is innovating in order to make those improvements in medical errors, except, you know, we got the Kaisers and the group healths out there that are actually doing this, and you just made an argument against having them participate in Medicare. You're trying to keep those innovations out of a government program.
I'm John Donvan, and this is Intelligence Squared U.S., Oxford-style debating in the United States.
Paul Krugman for the motion.
I just want to break one more thing. We've been talking a lot about quality of care, but there's one other thing that is very important, which is the financial ruin that often comes from medical expenses. And that is preventable, and that's only in America. The individual who is the family that's financially ruined, even every time I look at one of the studies that says, well, we can't show that providing health insurance makes that much difference in health outcomes. First of all, I don't quite believe it, but secondly, there is a tremendous difference in terms of not the medical side, but the economic side. And this is something, again, there's a risk, a fear, a terror of medical expenses, which happens among wealthy countries only in America.
I'm glad, Professor Krugman, that you're letting some economics creep into your remarks tonight. I want to point out, though, that the AARP recently released a study that showed that bankruptcy rates are rising fastest among those people who are covered by our only universal coverage program. Not only are they rising faster among that group than for other groups, but for other groups, those bankruptcy rates are falling. How is that consistent with what you said about universal coverage protecting us from financial ruin?
No, I'm not talking about bankruptcy rates. I'm talking about all kinds of things.
Well, give me another measure of financial ruin.
The elderly?
Give me another measure of financial ruin.
Hold your response to that. Perhaps you're summing up at the 2 minutes, because we do want to go to the audience. And gentlemen on the right.
So basically, like, what I can't wrap my brain around is, how can a system based on companies that make a profit on denying our care be made responsible for paying for our care?
John Stossel.
Well, you're right. The insurance companies have a conflict, and the insurance company has to balance. They want to pay for nothing. They hope none of you ever get sick, and if you get sick, they don't want to pay. But, of course, if they do that, word gets out, and they don't get any new customers. So that's how they have to balance that.
Actually, can I just do I wanted to ask a question.
Please,
I think it's a good time.
Ahead.
I wanted to ask actually two questions to the audience. First, how many Canadians? Would Canadians in the room please raise your hands?
We have about seven hands.
Okay, not as many as I thought. Okay, of those of you who are not on the panel who are Canadians, how many of you think you have a terrible healthcare system?
We see almost all of the same hands going up.
Bad move on my part. I've got a selected... all right, I won't try.
Thank you, Paul Krugman. Art Kellerman.
Yeah, there have been so many points out here that I wish we could address. One I want to talk about is waiting times, because you hear that all the time. The waiting times that matter are the waiting times for things like when you go to the ER and how quickly you see a doctor for a heart attack. Whether or not if you've got acute or worrisome symptoms, you can see your doctor that day or the next day, or you end up having to be in an ER. We're turning away one ambulance per minute in this country from overcrowded private as well as public hospitals in the United States. If you got to limp around for 2 months on a bum knee until you get a new titanium knee, I'm sorry. That's not going to kill you. You don't get to me for 30 or 45 minutes because you've been diverted from three hospitals. You're going to die. That's the wait and times that we need to worry about in the United States, and it's not going to happen if we ignore this problem.
Michael Cannon against the motion.
The leading researcher in the country on insurance markets, specifically the individual market where you buy insurance directly, is a man named Mark Pauly. He's at the University of Pennsylvania. And what he's found after researching what actually happens in insurance markets is he's found that those laws reduce the community rating laws that Professor Krugman favors reduce the number of people with health insurance. And they don't provide health insurance to many more sick people. And the reason is that that unregulated markets really do a remarkably good job of providing health insurance to people with expensive chronic conditions, provided they purchase health insurance while they're still healthy.
Hear great speeches and interviews at Access Sacramento every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. or go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Darling, so pale and wan, so
To the debate, should universal health coverage be the U.S. federal government's responsibility?
Michael Rackless.
In all this talk about health care with traditional economic models, that is one of the main reasons why you folks have not been able to make progress, is using traditional marketplace models focused on that as your ideology to analyze healthcare, which is not in any way close to being a traditional economic market, and to apply some sort of economic language, the way we're hearing from the other side, to a system which is where the supply side is massively regulated for good reasons. You know, do you want to be able to, you're going to have to look up every single provider that you see to find out, you know, whether or not they pass their licensing exams or not?
Sally, perhaps you look, you're dying to say something.
I just dying to say that, you know, we got a lot of the mess that we're in this country, including part of the 46 million, is because the federal government gave employers a tax advantage to provide health insurance. And as a result, people in America, 60% of people in America, get their health insurance through their employer. If you lose your job or you quit your job, we don't have portable health insurance. We really need to focus on growing the individual market so that people can buy insurance across state lines, people can get the type of insurance that fits their needs. We can grow the individual insurance market because competition will work. We can open up this market and cover a lot of those people because of the 46 million uninsured, 17 million earn over $50,000 a year, and 10 million earn over $75,000. A lot are young, they're healthy, and they don't want to pay $4,000 a year for insurance to cover things that they don't need to care for.
Many of those folks have illnesses, and they cannot get insurance no matter how much money they pay.
But if we opened up the market, new competitors would come into the market, they would be based on competition.
Healthcare is not a market.
Time out.
Well, it's not a right. It's not a right.
Time is up for this section. I want to remind you, just before we move to the summing up section in which each of the panelists will have 2 minutes, I want to remind you of how you voted when you came in. Before the debate, 49% of you agreed with the proposition that universal health coverage should be the federal government's responsibility. 24% of you were against that motion, and 27% were undecided. In the next 10 to 12 minutes, you will hear a summing up, and then we will vote one further time. And our first panelist, John Stossel.
If you think health care is expensive now, wait till you see how expensive it is when it's free. When it's free, there are no controls. I don't think this side is saying the American system is a good system. It's not a market. We're spending other people's money. Government is already involved, spending about half the money. Third parties pay for $7 out of every $8. This is an awful way to pay for things. Think how it would work if your car insurance worked that way. If they paid for your gas and your oil, you wouldn't care what gas costs, and people would sell you $100 oil changes. That's what's going on in healthcare under insurance companies paying or the government. And employment-based insurance makes no sense when 4 out of 10 Americans change jobs now every year. Government is not the answer. We don't have government steel mills or government airlines anymore because they were awful. And once they had competition, they went out of business. Michael says medicine's different, but every profession says that. The truth is, it's true. You're not an expert. You don't know which doctor is the best, but you don't know which car is best. You're not car engineers, but through word of mouth, the good news spreads. The bad companies go out of business. The good doctors will take over. And we see this now where there is a market, the tiny places like cosmetic surgery, LASIK eye surgery. The doctors give you their email addresses. Does your doctor do that? They give out their cell phone numbers. The waiting rooms are nice. And the prices are going down while the quality is going up. The post office can never give us what FedEx can.
John Stossel speaking against the motion. Speaking for the motion in his summary, Paul Krugman.
Government health care is imperfect. Actually, government health care is not the issue. Government insurance is imperfect. So is private insurance. There are horror stories. The nature of health care is that lots of bad things happen. You don't generally seek health care because you're feeling great. But we have extensive experience. We have Medicare, which is a system that is flawed but has actually shown slower cost inflation than private health insurance over the past 40 years. We have the Veterans Health Administration, which is our little island of true socialized medicine in the United States and does very well. And above all, what we have is a system right now. Remember what the proposition is. The motion is that the federal government should guarantee health care. Not that the government should run everything, not that everything should be under government control, but whether there should be a federal guarantee of health care for everybody. And that, I think, is something that American values, that our fundamental morality says is something we should be doing.
Thank you, Paul Krugman.
Truth is divinity. Something completely different.